Unlocking the power of communication, transforming lives through voice.
It feels super awkward, it feels super weird. And then she plays one key nonstop on the piano for 2 minutes. It's literally, I was like, oh shit, this is like something out of a horror movie. And then she turns around, she goes, how do you feel? I said, nothing, weird, awkward, what? And then she goes, good, turns around, plays this beautiful song called Mariage d'Amour. Goes over for 2 minutes. And then she turns around, she goes, how do you feel? And I said, weirded out from before still. But I feel, wow, that song had love. There was lust. There was romance. There was excitement. And she goes, good. Honey, most people go through life speaking like this. I'm going to teach you how to speak like this. And that's, to me at the time, I remember thinking to myself, that is the greatest sales pitch I've ever heard in my life. Because I'm now going to sign up for 12 classes with you because you've just helped me realize something I've been struggling with my entire life. I haven't been thinking about my voice as an instrument. I thought it was a tool. What do you do with a hammer? You use a hammer. What do you do with a screwdriver? You use a screwdriver. What do you do with a piano? You play with it. What do you do with a violin? You play with it. And she started to teach me that I have this instrument that depending on how I play it, it changes and shifts how others feel.
How much do you think that will change the trajectory of someone's life? Like, what is the impact? If I get really good at communication, why does it matter?
I was invisible my entire childhood. I was invisible. I wasn't the cool kid. I wasn't the good-looking kid. I wasn't the charismatic kid. I wasn't the funny kid. I wasn't the anything kid. And by learning this skill, I've been able to negotiate an incredible reality. And that's why I love Tim Ferriss's quote so much. Reality is negotiable. Cool. Well, what skill do we use to negotiate the reality we desire? It's our ability to communicate. Teaching that to others has been one of the most fulfilling things I've ever done. And I genuinely believe that makes the world a better place. And I almost sometimes feel like I'm just here to tune pianos. I'm here to help people tune and fix and learn how to play. And I get so much fulfillment from that. My parents have this fundamental belief. It's so beautiful. They believe every child is born with a diamond, with a gift, with something in them. So I found one of my diamonds early on. It was magic, right? So I was really good at magic. They hoped it was medicine, accounting, you know, the Asian prophecy. So when I found that diamond being magic, I thought that all I had to do was get really good technically as a magician. Because that's what I was taught at university, being an accountant. Oh, if you become really technically proficient as an accountant, you'll become an amazing accountant. You'll be successful. You get the BMW, you get everything, get partner. So I thought, okay, magic, same thing. Get really good technically. Spent thousands of hours in my bedroom by myself in front of a mirror practicing magic. Got nowhere because I was missing an ingredient. Magicians call it showmanship, fancy word for communication skills, right? We're both inspired by the same person, I believe. One of the people we're inspired by is Derren Brown. Mm-hmm. Impeccable showmanship, impeccable technical skills. So when you pair technical skills with great communication skills, that's when you thrive, I believe. Because let's say, for example, you're technically brilliant, you're a 10 out of 10 technically, but you're 3 out of 10 with your communication skills. Do you think people perceive you to be a 10 out of 10 or a 3 out of 10? And you know this, hearing so many different pitches. Some of the greatest ideas have flown under your radar without you noticing because the founder didn't do it justice.
It's an interesting idea to think that we might rise or fall to the level, not of our technical ability, but our communication skills as it relates to how the world perceives us.
And it's both. The importance there is both. Whereas I feel like we get stuck into this world where we think, oh, it's one or the other. And my students always ask me this, which one should I focus on? And I said, well, the reality is both. Mm. It's not as simple. It's both. Because if I have great showmanship and then when it comes to doing sleight of hand, I suck, that's not going to work either. The people that I've been able to help the most in my career so far are the people who are technically so amazing at what they do. And they've been hidden away in the back office as a technician. And then bloody Brad always gets the promotion, right? Brad always gets it. Ah, damn it, Brad got it again. Brad's not smart as me. Brad is not as good as me, right? And it's because Brad talks better. He's more visible in the work environment.
You really think it often comes down to just how we speak and communicate?
Our value, yes. Because if you can't communicate your value in a way that is clear and concise, people, it's not their responsibility to see the brilliance that exists within you. It's, I believe, your responsibility to learn how to shine your light brightly. It's super sad because I lived a massive part of my life like that. English is my third language. The first language I learned is a Chinese dialect Not that impressive. My wife speaks five, but thank you. The first language I learned was a Chinese dialect called Dijiu. Right, it's a bit of Dijiu for you. Or see Dijiu Nang. Second language I then had to learn fluently is Vietnamese. Vân là người Việt Nam, tôi là Vân San ở nước Úc. So I had to learn all these different languages growing up. These were my first two core languages that if I wasn't proficient in it, grandma would be pissed off, mum would be pissed off. So we had to study it. And then I went to school and had to learn English. So I went to school. I was completely invisible. I couldn't communicate with any other kid. They couldn't communicate with me. So what do kids do? Oh, it's too hard. I'll just ignore you then.
They bully you.
Oh, yes. I didn't even know it was bullying because I couldn't understand them. Right? I could kind of read what they seemed mean, but I had no idea what they were saying. So I spent so much of my childhood, especially in those single-digit years around 5, 6, and 7. This is super sad, but I just spent a lot of time in the toilet because I didn't want to deal with the shame of being seen by myself. So I just hid. I just found a corner somewhere and no one... And then gradually I started to learn English. But even when I learned English, I sounded funny because I had an accent. So then they called me FOB, F-O-B, fresh off the boat. Yeah. And they just kept calling me, oh, there's the FOB. Oh, he's so fobby. And then, so then even though I learned the English language now, I'm scared to speak it because I don't want to sound like a FOB. And there were all these challenges. And so I know what it's like to feel invisible. I know what it's like to be ignored. And
that was a long time ago. And yeah, I guess the question that it leaves me with is how easy is it for someone to learn? Like, what is the time span that it would take from the experience you've had with teaching people to make a radical change in your communication skills?
It depends on your level of desire and motivation.
If you really want it.
I'd say 3 to 6 months.
You think you can change your communication skills in a radical way in 3 to 6 months?
I've seen it. I've seen students do it. It's when instead of just thinking about I'm trying to learn a new habit, it's what James Clear says. You adopt a new identity, where they adopt that new identity. Because one of the things I do is I share that story about my schooling experience at the beginning of my in-person classes, and I say, I want you all to imagine now you're at a new school. No one here in this room with us right now has any preconceived idea of who you are. Break the mold. Break it. And then you see grown adults do things they wouldn't normally do, break out of the mold, play with their voice, be a little silly, reconnect with their inner child. And then in that moment, they fall so deeply in love with that version of them because of the reactions they've been able to get from all those strangers around them that they commit to it. It's when you experience that change in the moment, it usually leads to a fairly profound desire after that. Oh, I want to become this now. But then they make a big mistake. And the biggest mistake they make is they'll go home to their partner and who has no context of the experience they've been through. And they've just went, oh, I've been quiet with my voice my entire life. And they'll go home, they're like, new me, new year, new me, honey. And then their partner goes, oh, why are you doing that with your voice? Oh, you learned that from Vin? What? That's gross. Why are you doing that? That's so fake. It's so inauthentic. And then they revert back to who they have always been their entire life.
What areas of one's life have you seen in those examples change when someone learned communication skills? Because we often, the examples we've given so far are just like work.
Yeah. With their children. This has been the coolest part because I'm a dad. I teach a concept called vocal foundations, which we can dive into later. And there's these beautiful 5 core vocal foundations that people can learn. And I love it when parents go through it because I always see these comments where they said, oh my goodness, just read to the kids. They've never reacted to me in that way before. The moment, the one night I go home and I read to my kids and I do it in a boring way, they go, Dad, don't read it like that. Do it the fun way. And what they're asking for is they're asking for that vocal variety. They're asking for that inner child, for that playfulness. And I think that's one of the greatest, I think that's one of my greatest superpowers is the ability to be playful and the willingness to be playful.
So you're going to help me in work. You're going to help me be a more entertaining, engaging parent. Are there any other areas of one's life that improve when they crack communication?
Yes, there is an area. And the area is improv. Learn improvisation. People all want to get better at communication.
The art of storytelling and authentic communication.
And she goes, well, okay, you obviously hate it. And I'm like, no, I love it. I love it. And I didn't know how to emote. And again, I thought I was stuck like that because I was stuck like that for years. And that damaged a lot of my relationships. Because here's the thing that I think, and it might be helpful for you too. When you're listening to someone talk, you don't have to react with sound because otherwise you'll be seen as interrupting the other person, right? You can react with facial expressions. And that is one of the most powerful ways to show them you're listening and that you're following along. How cool is that? Because if someone's saying something really bad and you're like,
yeah,
it shows them you're locked in.
Yeah, you learn it as a podcaster.
Yeah, you do.
Because the audience, they're looking at you for most of the conversation. So 95% of the conversation's on you.
Yes.
What they don't know is that throughout that time, I'm basically talking to you with my face.
You are. And you're really good at it.
So if I turn my head like this, it means tell me more. So you'll be talking, I'll go like this.
Yes.
And it means tell me more.
Yes.
And then it's interesting. Yeah.
And you can expand that range.
Yeah.
It doesn't just have to be curious.
Yeah.
And because I see you do it.
Yeah.
I see you consistently do the different faces to give me the cue to almost go, oh, he wants to elaborate. Oh, he's in. He's locked in.
Do you know, the thing I've learned from both speaking on stage but also doing this is you can also fuck it up. You can also communicate the wrong thing.
Yes.
Accidentally. One of them that people communicate quite often with that accidentally is they start talking while you're speaking. Do you ever know that? Like when someone's listening to speak, they start going like this. Yeah. And it means shut the fuck up. I have something to say.
I just did it
too. Not like that, but it's that kind of, no, but it's that kind of thing. It's like, you know, I think, who was on my podcast? It was Vanessa. She said, if you do the fast nod, it means shut the fuck up. So if you go, yeah. But if you do the slow nod, it means, oh, I love this. So if I go,
oh, I learned something. That's curiosity. Tell me more.
Yeah. Versus, yeah. Wave my hand. Yeah. Okay, so tonality, so emotion.
And that was so beautiful to see you do that. Because it just, again, we just have such great range. And then imagine you start to vary your rate of speech now. You vary volume. You've got different melody. You've also got different facial expressions. This is such a rich song that you're playing now.
Do you think much about the actual words you're saying as well?
Of course.
I can see that you think about the structure of what you're saying. I.e., like you're thinking about, because when you start speaking, I notice that you often go into a story straight away. Something interesting. You'll say, this is one of the greatest things I've learned from my teacher. Is that intentional?
It is. Because I believe stories are more sticky than me just throwing you a bunch of tips and hacks and tricks.
Do you have a storytelling formula?
I do.
What is the storytelling formula?
I think the way most people tell stories is they report stories. So I'll share a story with you, okay? And reporting a story is, let's say you ask me the question, this is one of my favorite stories. It's, let's say you ask me how I met my wife. A reporting a story is just me saying, oh, I met my wife at a bar and I did some magic to her, she didn't like it and that was cool. And then I gradually was able to woo her in the end, but I met her at a bar. That's me reporting the story, right? It kind of sounds like a news reporter.
Yeah.
Right, so if you think about it again, let me just anchor it with a news reporter. It's like a news reporter saying, last night at a bar at 9 p.m., Vinjang went to a bar called Distill and tried to pick up a girl, did a cheesy magic trick. It didn't work. Therefore, he failed. He came back four times again, and then he saw her, and then he succeeded, and now they're married. On to the next news, right? Mm-hmm. So it's kind of very reportery. Whereas
Matter of fact.
Yeah. Whereas this is the story of how I met my wife. So I still remember this because this happened in 2009. I crashed a girl's graduation party named Vivian. It was at a bar called Distill, this beautiful bar called Distill. And there was two levels to this bar, and the bottom was for everybody, and on top was the high rollers, and you had to buy expensive drinks to get to the top. And I got to the top, and I saw this beautiful Malaysian girl sitting by the bar. So I said to my friends, I said, watch this. And I take a packet of cards out of my pants because I'm a magician. So I walk up to her, and I say, would you be impressed if I transform this King of Hearts into the Queen of Hearts like yourself?
Yeah,
disgusted. I know, you're making the disgusted face. And that's how she reacted. She looked at me as if she smelt a bloody fart. She looks at me and she goes, I'd be more impressed if you transformed into a real man, had a conversation with me. Boom. And I've never had that reaction before. Normally people say, wow, you're amazing. So I said to her, no thanks. And I left, tail between my legs. The boys all teased me and everything. But I was so drawn. Her confidence. Just, oh, there was something there. I went back to the bar four times in a row. She wasn't there, then she was there. And I walked up to her the second time and I said, hey, listen, what if I transformed into a real man tonight, took you out for a coffee? And we fell in love. You know, and that's the story of how I met my wife. Whereas the way I would normally tell that story is just, oh, I met her at a bar, did some tricks, she didn't like it, and then that was fine.
Yeah.
But all of a sudden, there was so much life, so much zest in that story.
I noticed you added so much almost irrelevant detail. But you talked about the bar having two floors and
to
stuff.
To make it visual.
Okay, so I could picture it in my mind.
Yes, I wanted to make it visual. Well, so here's the thing. When you think of the storytelling formula, if you just give the who, what, where, and when, that's the basics people need. But what turns it from reporting to reliving because that's what you want to get to. You want to get to reliving a story is the ingredients that you just called out. So intuitive of you to call them out. VAX, V-A-K-S, which stands for visual, auditory, kinesthetic, and smell. So I'm just describing those few things for you, right? And it doesn't always have to have all the ingredients, but you want to add some of those ingredients, right? So the visual I described to you, the visual, the auditory, what I said, I did my voice, I did her voice, I gave you dialogue, right? So all of a sudden you bring those the story to life. Now it goes from reporting to reliving. So if I told that story, and let's say that now the connection ability is, again, it's to do with improv as well, is instead of just going out and saying, here's three ways to shop authentically when you're trying to pick up someone.
Yeah.
Instead of doing that, I share the story first. I get you to engage. I build rapport. I build chemistry. Now you've heard the story. Now you have rapport with me. You feel more relaxed. You feel more creative, right? Then I link that story to, so the very next time you walk into a girl, if she does say no, she may not be saying no to you. She may just be saying no to your approach. Here are the three ways you can show up more authentically as a man.
Hmm.
I believe that is a much more powerful way to then go into the three tips. Whereas I feel that because of the world now with social media, we've lost the art form of storytelling. It's just give me the three tips now.
I've heard you talk about these four elements to a great story, which is the hook, the struggle, the breakthrough, and the application, which is kind of what you just displayed there.
Well, the importance of application, I think, is something that I really focus on with my students.
And by application, you mean the lesson or the big takeaway from the story? Because sometimes people tell stories and they go nowhere.
Well, it's also what you do after.
Okay.
Because I can share a story, but one of our videos went viral, and I don't claim to be an expert on social media, okay? So I still don't understand how some of these things work, even though we've been able to grow all of our social channels quite quickly. I don't understand how it works. To me, I'm like, oh, wow, I can't believe that worked last time. Oh, it doesn't work anymore. Huh, that's weird. So to me, it's what people love is when you give them a really simple, pragmatic takeaway that they can go and actually do. Like, go do it now.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas we don't apply knowledge. We just keep consuming and go through knowledge acquisition. There's a cycle of doom that we go through. There's just this cycle of, I mean, this is the cycle my students go through. Oh, job promotion. Oh, crap, I need to work on my communication skills. What's the first thing they do? They go to Google. And then they Google, how do I improve my interview skills, my communication skills? Then they get back 10.6 million results. They go, ah, this is too crazy. Surely someone's created a YouTube video. Then they go to YouTube. They type in how to improve communication skills. They get 3 million videos, right? And they go, ah, this is too, ChatGPT. I'll go to ChatGPT now. How to improve communication skills. And it gives you these generic answers from blogs that have no relevance to you. And then after that, you feel so overwhelmed. You do nothing with it. But it's just this cycle we all fall victim to. Over and over and over again, we just keep consuming knowledge and nothing actually changes because we're not applying it.
So the key is to get out there and start running some of these techniques in the real world.
And just pick one.
Mastering virtual presence, the art of effective communication on Zoom.
This kind of thing.
Yeah.
How do the rules that you've said and you've talked about today apply or not apply to when I'm doing my Zoom meetings?
Yeah. It's even more important online. Because the moment you sit in front of a camera and you're not a creator, what happens? The moment it's unnatural, what happens to you? Because it's weird sitting in front of a webcam. What happens to you, do you think?
You lose yourself a little bit.
Yes.
Yeah.
Everything drops. All of your vocal foundations disappear.
So what do I need to be thinking about to be effective? I want to be the most effective person on my Zoom calls. Because I do worry sometimes. I do worry because I have big investment meetings and stuff with startups or founders that I'm in the process of trying to do a deal with. And I think, God, if we do this on Zoom, it might not be so good. I might come across worse. I feel like I'll come across better in person. So I often move the meeting to in person.
And then sometimes it's not always convenient, right?
It's never convenient because you've got to drive somewhere and fly somewhere. So I'd rather be effective on Zoom.
Nothing will replace this. It's why I flew here from Australia. It's nothing will replace this. If we did this virtually, it's not the same. But when you have to do it virtually, you have to give more of yourself. If you want them to feel valued, you have to adopt a mindset of generosity. I'll explain. We often think of generosity as the first form of generosity, which is money, right? Easiest form of generosity to grasp. And then you think about it for a bit more. You go, oh, it's time. Oh, okay, cool. And then you think about it for more. Often people don't think about the third form of generosity, which is energy. That's what the third form is. Because right now with you, I'm being generous with my energy. I'm choosing to do this, Stephen. I'm not just, I'm choosing to do it because I want to connect with you. because I want to be able to share the knowledge and I want to be able to do this. Whereas there's a part of, again, there's a part of my brain that's like, oh man, you're jet lagged, you're tired, just back off a little bit, who cares, all good. Whereas I'm now being generous with it. And online, you have to be so conscious of that. You have to be so much more generous with your energy. Because naturally, when you're sitting in front of a camera, you feel weird, and then all of a sudden, it's like my wife. When she watches me run my classes, she goes, I can't be in the same room because I feel like you're being too much. And I am. Because when I'm teaching my classes online with 400 or 500 people, I bring a much bigger version of myself to that class. I'm bringing a much bigger version than this. And then my poor wife sitting there, she goes, oh, he's overdoing it, he's overdoing it. But to every single student on that class with me virtually, oh, Vin, this is so engaging. It's so beautiful to see how much zest you have for what you do. And afterwards, I'm exhausted. But it's a choice I'm willing to make to be masterful with what I do in that moment. Now make sure your camera placement is well-placed. A lot of people, when they appear on Zoom, all you see is their head. Now that makes you less visually dynamic. Whereas this is why you need the external mic, push the laptop back, external camera, wider lens, let them see your whole torso. Yeah, I love this. This is so important. And I learned this from Vanessa Van Edwards, where you brought her on.
Oh, yeah.
Such a powerful concept, where it's the idea of proxemics, where there's the study of distances. Most people, when they appear on Zoom, they appear in the intimate space. And the intimate space is when your head is right next to your partner at night, where you're doing pillow talk. And that's how you appear on Zoom. And when you appear that close, you feel self-conscious. Everybody else goes, oh, that's a bit, right? So if you all of a sudden now learn to appear in the personal and social space, which means they can see your full torso, that people feel more comfortable, but now you also have access to your hand gestures. Light yourself well.
Okay.
And something very simple. If you're doing Zoom meetings all the time and it's critical for you in your work, then learn three-point lighting, right? Three-point lighting. You've got that going on right here, right? And if you don't know what it is, if you just searched it, you'd find it, which
is
essentially
three-point lighting.
You've got a key light, you've got a fuel light, and you've got a hair light behind you, right?
Okay, so there's a light behind you.
Yes.
There's one on the side here.
Yes.
And there's one in the front. Is that what you mean?
Yes. Three key lights, essentially.
Okay, fine.
Yeah. So again, they technically call, my videographers teach me all this, where they say, oh, you need a key light, you've got to have a fuel light, then you've got to have a backlight. At the moment I did that on my Zoom calls, I just looked different to every single other person who appeared on that Zoom call.
Interesting.
I'm just clearer, I'm crisper, right? And this is, again, if you want to take it to the next level.
I want to take it to the next level.
All right, then great. Then get a better quality camera too. Don't rely on the laptop camera.
Okay.
Right? A lot of people do this who are creators. You just get a nicer webcam, minimum 1080p. So you look sharper, you look clearer, and you're well lit.
Okay.
Now you look better.
Done.
Perfect. Get an external mic.
Okay.
Because if you spend all of your time working on all of these wonderful vocal foundations, and if you've got a shitty microphone, and then you talk... Oh, you've lost there again.
And get fucking good Wi-Fi while you're
yes, out. Yes, please. Oh, Australia needs to listen to this as well.
Yeah, fiber optic.
Yeah, 100%. And then all of a sudden now, so your visual looks good, auditory is looked after, and don't be afraid to bring a bigger version of yourself.
So much of this is about identity, isn't it?
It is.
We're like, so many of us, including me, we're trapped in our identity, like who we think we are. Do you know what one of the really remarkable things that always reminds me how like BS our communication style and our identity by way of this is just different accents.
Yes.
The fact that someone can live in an area and they can be Scouse or they can, you know, live in another area and they sound completely different, like they're from New York or something. And it just goes to show that we're just like, it's so contagious and easy to blend in with one's environment.
I remember experiencing a negative experience with accent. When I started to improve my articulation and I wanted to improve my pronunciation, everybody around me was saying, you're trying to be British.
Oh, really?
You're trying so hard to be British. How? I'm like, no, I'm just trying to improve my articulation, right? I used to slur my words all the time. Being an Aussie, we use so much slang. Yeah, I was gonna, but I didn't wanna, right? And I could get that to a point where you won't even understand what I'm saying. Yeah, I was gonna, but I didn't wanna. Yeah, nah. Didn't want to do it, right? Whereas I didn't pronounce my T's. And then when I did pronounce my T's, instead of saying three, I would say free. Can I have free of those? And that's how I used to talk. And I didn't realize by talking like that, people were making judgments about my intelligence. And I was like, what? I didn't even know this. I didn't even know that this was happening. And all I was doing, and again, people try to keep me the same because of identity. That's not how you should sound, Vin. That the mold you are is you're a fob, mate. What are you doing? Why are you trying to be this British Australian? And I just said to them, because when I speak like that, it creates the wrong perception in people's minds, and then they now look down on me as a result of that.
There are some accents that experience more discrimination than other accents. They did a study in 2006. It was a survey of the Chartered Institute of Personal and Development, found that 76% of employers admitted to discriminating against candidates based solely on their accent.
We judge a book by its cover, don't we? We have that. I have a thought, though. My thought is, and this is what I believe, is that I don't believe accents are a problem. I believe articulation and pronunciation are. Why do you think people from the UK are smart? There's this perception of it. Don't you get that? Where you're sophisticated. James Bond. It's because you articulate extremely well. Especially the ones that make it to the movies. Right? The ones we see. It's because of that. And you can have that level of sophistication and intelligence, and you can radiate that intelligence with any accent. I have students from India who, the moment they improve their articulation, it's beautiful. There's nothing wrong with your accent. For the longest time, they said, my accent is a problem. I said, no. It's not a problem. The problem is, and here's where we go deep. Your whole life, you've learned the mouth movements to speak the Indian language. Then when you go speak the English language, you're now using Indian mouth movements to speak the English language, which are the wrong set of mouth movements to speak this particular language. But no one teaches us this. And I use the Vietnamese mouth movements to speak the English language, therefore, accent and lack of clarity. So what did I have to do? Learn the set of English mouth movements. Completely changed me.
And how did you do that?
A speech pathologist.
Oh, really?
I had to go see a speech pathologist, yeah. I struggled with this, Stephen, my whole life.
Mastering connection through conversation techniques.
I see when my fellow dragons will be like interrogating someone and I'm watching, and I watch some of them, they go, yeah, but, yeah. And they just get the person's back up. Like they just, it's like it becomes this real antagonistic exchange. And it reminds me of Tali Sharrett, who's a neuroscientist that was on my podcast, who told me they did studies where they put two people in these like brain scanners and they got them to agree and scan their brains. And when they agreed, their brains were illuminated. Then in the next round, they got them to disagree at a certain moment. Hmm. And when they disagreed with each other in these brain scanners, their brains basically shut down because they've gone into...
Shut down?
It's almost like you could... When I say shut down, it's like the lights went out.
Hmm.
And so she taught me this law that I wrote about, which is called never disagree. Mm. When you say that, people go, never disagree?
Doesn't make sense. That's what yes and is so good for. Mm. Is even if you say something negative, it's all right. Even if you say that your content sucks. Yes, and I know sometimes we put out content that just misses the mark. I'm human. Mm. And then there's no fire now because we're not creating the friction to create a fire. And I again take that path because... I'm just not interested in just arguing for blatant argument. I'm just not interested in that.
The other thing that people struggle with a lot, and we talked about it a tiny little bit earlier on, is starting conversations and small talk.
Yeah.
It's difficult. I think it's becoming increasingly more difficult as we become more sort of digitalized in our lives.
It requires so much courage. I feel that starting a meaningful conversation requires a lot of courage.
This sounds like a crazy fucking thing to say on a podcast in 2025. How do we start a conversation with another human being? Is there like a...
I've got a favorite technique that I use. And it requires courage. So you have been warned. It requires courage. And it's a game, simple game, called High Low Buffalo. High Low Buffalo. I love this game. Oh, you're not aware of this. Again, because you haven't played in the world of improv. High Low Buffalo. High is something that's going great for you. Low, something that's not so great for you. Buffalo, something interesting about you. Now, there's a reason why this game is so great. It's great because if I play High Low Buffalo and you play High Low Buffalo, and we'll play it in a second, are you game to play?
Yeah.
Okay. Then what we're doing is we're creating something called conversational threads. Let's play first. So do you want to go first or do you want me to go first?
You go first.
Okay, sure. Hi, I'm doing the Diary of a CEO podcast. This is pretty awesome. So I love that about this. Like, this is amazing for me. This is a big high for me. Low. I'm really struggling with what is enough in this chapter of my life and how much I should pursue building my business, how much I should grow it. I'm really struggling with that enough component. And something interesting about me is I have 3 alpacas and I live on an acreage.
Gosh, that's crazy. I've got to beat alpacas now.
Don't beat alpacas. Whatever you
I've
like.
I've got a dog called Pablo.
Yeah, there you go. You're overthinking it. Don't overthink it. Give it a go.
Hi, I'm really enjoying this conversation and I'm learning a lot, awesome. Which is amazing. Low, I haven't been working out in the gym as much as I want, and I'm concerned that my like balance is off because I'm recording a lot and things are out of whack and I'm trying to work in the evenings and that's a struggle, trying to squeeze my relationships in there as well. Random interesting thing. I'm training for a marathon that I haven't signed up to yet.
That's incredible. I didn't know you were going to do that. That's incredible.
That's not as good as alpacas.
And definitely wasn't as good as alpacas. However, that's great.
Okay.
When you have the courage to do this with someone now, I've given you three conversational threads that you can pull on.
Do you say it to them that we're going to do Hilo Buffalo?
I play this game with people Scroll I up. Meet that I want to connect with.
Okay.
This is not if I'm on the bus and I'm talking to someone.
Okay.
No, because that's generally small talk. And if you don't want to connect with the person, it doesn't make sense.
But what if I'm in an elevator, or I'm in a social setting, I'm at a networking right. event?
Well, the game I just gave you is different. The game I gave you is a game that you play with a colleague you've been working with for the last 4 years, but you barely go beyond hi.
Okay.
Right? Because, and we'll stick to that and then I can share with you the other one. But to me, what's powerful about that game we just played is we all have people, the reason people hate their work so much is because they don't feel connected. And it's because they're not having conversations at work. It's because they don't feel a sense of connection with their team members. So to me, when you are courageous enough to play this game, say you've been working with Susan for 12 months and you always see each other in the lunchroom, but you just sit down with Susan and go, Susan, I know this is a bit crazy. Listen to a guy named Vin on Diary of a CEO. He said, if you want to connect with someone and you care about the connection, play a game called Hilo Buffalo. Are you game? Play. And just do what we just did. Because all of a sudden now, I've given you three threads, right? Excited to be here. Also struggling with enough. And then also shared with you, I've got three alpacas. I live on an acreage. There are three things that you could choose from, what you're interested in asking me about. You just gave me three things. I'm also very conscious about health and I haven't been that great with it too. So all of a sudden I've got three threads to choose from.
What's the opposite of that?
Did you watch the Mr. Beast? Oh, I haven't. Who's Mr. Beast? Oh, that's cool. All right, I'll see you in the meeting at 2. I'll catch you then. No worries. Because you've taken your shot in the dark and you've given one thread and it just didn't hit. Whereas I'm giving myself three chances here. I'm giving three opportunities for a conversation to spark. But in actuality, there are six threads here because there's three from me, there's three from you.
I'm going to roll around the office when I get back to London and I'm going to ask people for some Hilo Buffalo.
And just because all of a sudden that requires vulnerability.
Yeah.
That requires something you're excited about. And it's also something interesting. You didn't even know. I didn't know you were going for a marathon, man. That's awesome. Right? You should sign off for it.
Yeah.
Shouldn't I? What's stopping you?
No matter where I am in the world, it seems like everyone is drinking matcha. And there's a good chance that matcha you're drinking is made by a company that I've invested more than seven figures in, who are a sponsor of this podcast called Perfect Ted. Because they're the brand used globally by cafes like Blank Street Coffee and Joe and the Juice and many, many more. Not only can you get Perfect Ted matcha in cafes, but you can now also make it at home. Much cheaper. In seconds, using our flavored matcha powders that I have here in front of me. Perfect Ted matcha is ceremonial grade and sourced from Japan. It is smooth. It is naturally sweet, not like those bitter grassy matchas that I tried before Perfect Ted. And if you are one of those people that have told yourself you don't like matcha, it's probably because you haven't tried our Perfect Ted matcha. And you can find Perfect Ted matcha in the UK in Tesco, Sainsbury's, Holland & Barrett, and in Waitrose, or Albert Heijn if you're in the Netherlands, and on Amazon in the USA, or get the full range online at perfectted.com, where you can get 40% off your first order with code STEPHEN40. Quick one, I want to talk to you about our sponsor, Whoop, a business I'm also an investor in. And if you follow me on Instagram, you've probably noticed that recently I've picked up running, which I'm very much enjoying. And it started out as a challenge, but it's now evolved into something I do almost daily. It is one of those things that's pushing me to be better every single day. But here's the thing. To me, progress isn't just about pushing harder. It's also about training in a smarter way, which is where my Whoop comes in. Whoop doesn't just track my workouts. It tells me how ready my body is to take them on before I've even started the workout. A few years ago, Whoop ran a study called Project P. And it found that runners who adjusted their training based on their recovery scores improved their 5K times by an average of 2 minutes and 40 seconds while reducing injury risk by over 30%. And they did it while training less. So if you're looking for this type of guidance when it comes to your training, head over to join.whoop.com/CEO and get a 30-day trial with zero commitment. That's join.whoop.com/CEO. Let me know how you get on. Small talk is so critical. I was reading this study that said 55% of relationships, both professional and personal, are formed through small talk and casual interactions. A study done by the University of Oxford. And it says that 80% of conversations in the workplace involve some form of small talk. That's Harvard Business Review. If I want to be a master at small talk, is there anything else that I need to know? I really struggle with small talk.
3-2-1. I tell my students 3-2-1, which is 3 steps, 2 types, or the 1 thing. So just have that in the back of your head. There are 3 steps to something, there are 2 types of something, or the 1 thing is. So when someone's talking to you, you want to keep it fairly brief and you want to kind of minimize that small talk, and you know, you don't want to turn it into big talk. They'll talk to you about something and you go, the 1 thing about building a personal brand is XYZ, X, right? So you go, the 1 thing about personal branding, if I could share with you now, is the importance of being consistent.
Embracing vulnerability through communication.
My home with this such limited version of Vin, and I was too afraid to venture out of Salisbury.
Vin, what's the most important thing that we haven't spoken about, that we should have spoken about today as it relates to the work that you do? And if you had to guess what the person at home, that question that they have that I didn't ask, that they're screaming at the screen, what it might be that we didn't cover, what do you think it would be?
One big thing is, so I've taught you all these different things you can do with your voice, all these different things you can play with your body language. And the big thing they're screaming at home is they're screaming out, yeah, but if I did that tonight with my partner, they're going to freak out. They're going to go, what the hell is that? What are you doing, right? So all of a sudden now there needs to be a process for that. So Vin, what is the process for that? Thank you for asking. And the process for that is you have to understand, first of all, I love this concept of neutral ears. And a neutral ear is someone who has no preconceived idea of how you sound or how you communicate. And there are neutral ears everywhere. Before I met you, well, you've watched my content. But if I go out today and I go to get some gas or I go to the grocery store, there are neutral ears there. They don't have any preconceived ideas of how I sound, how I talk with my hands, whether or not I'm aware of the power sphere or not. You could go out in those instances and try out these new behaviors.
Run it on some neutral ears. I like that.
Run it on some neutral ears. And then you can play. So if normally you speak very quietly, tonight when you go to the gas station, go in there with vibrant volume and go, hey, quick question before I go in. Do you have any chocolates with the peanuts? Yeah, you do. I'm going to come in. I'm coming in for them. Play. Just do it, right? And just do it. Sometimes one look can put you back in your mold. Whereas when you do it with neutral ears, and when you try new behaviors with no negative judgment, you know what it does? It helps those behaviors stick a little bit more.
Yeah.
Because it helps you feel normal doing it. And then you have a chance now to play and be vulnerable. Look for neutral ears. I'd set people KPIs. Every single day, and every single day, set yourself a KPI. Maybe go to a gas station a little further from your house and play with your voice, play with your body language, be a bigger version of you. And as you do this more and more and more, you iron out the kinks. You'll do it. You'll feel wrong. You go, that's okay. I'm going to try it again. Oh, that felt right. And then you start to finesse, because the first time someone plays the saxophone, it sounds terrible. But as they play it more and more and more and more, oh, they get better and better and better and better. So neutral ear is very important. Okay, so that's a process. Then if you want your partner to be supportive, then you have to prime the conversation when you go home. So don't immediately come home as this other version of you. Come home and prime it by saying, look, honey, I've been very quiet with my voice my entire life, and I just feel inspired to give you and the kids more of me. So if you see me play with my volume, if you see me play with my melody, could you please encourage me and support me on this journey? Because I want to be better.
Do it with me?
Yeah. Oh, that's beautiful. I love that. Yes. And maybe we can do it together. All of a sudden now, this shifts the way they see the change. You can do this with your colleagues as well.
I love that. Yeah. Neutral ears. Then we have a closing tradition on this podcast where the last guest leaves a question for the next guest, not knowing who they're leaving it for. And the question that's been left for you: what is one thing that you know to be true? I'm doing pauses. Did you see that? Even though you can't prove it.
That in the world we live right now, you can negotiate whatever reality you desire. Right now, in my own mind, I just have that belief, and that belief has served me my entire life. And I have this voice in my head where it says, oh, when you die and there's a greater being, they're going to go, oh, you're wrong. you're wrong in telling people that you can negotiate whatever reality you desire. It's not true. Now, let's say that happens and then I meet the creator and he says that to me. I'd still be glad I lived my life in that way. I'd still be glad I lived my life in that exact way.
I mean, gosh, yeah, a much more productive, optimistic, effective way to live, even if you're wrong.
Even if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
Because I believe there are useful beliefs and then there are useless beliefs. I used to carry so many useless beliefs, Stephen, so many. And now I just choose to believe in beliefs that support me in being able to create the reality that I desire. Is that even if I'm wrong, I still am glad I lived my life in this way. Because there's a part of my brain right now that genuinely believes this, that there'll be a day when I will be bored with this chapter of life and no longer want to teach communication skills. I just hope that I have the courage. But I know that I'll be able to live a chapter where I become a chef. I love cooking. And I know it to be true that if I wanted that and I'm ready for that chapter, I can write a chapter where I become a great chef.
Vin, thank you. Thank you for coming all the way from Australia, and thank you so much for the work that you do. You're so remarkably good at making the complex simple. And I think I really, really deeply believe, and this is why I wanted to speak to you, I really, really believe that there's so many people, this is interesting language I'm about to use, that are basically being unfairly treated by the world because for whatever reason, they didn't come across the skills that you've spent many, many, many years giving to people. And I just really hope that there's someone listening now who has had that, and I know there will be because there's so many people in your audience and I've seen the feedback that you get, who's had the trajectory of their life altered in relationships, professions, the job, the promotion, family, communication, where, whatever it might be, because of you. And I know, because I've seen the comments, I know that there are many, 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 many thousands and thousands and thousands of people who have said exactly that. So on behalf of all of them, but also on behalf of the people that have even one tool out of what you said today, one place to start on that journey towards a different tomorrow trajectory, life. Thank you. Thank you for the work that you do. I know it must get fucking boring after a while, doing the same thing, saying the same stuff, being asked the same questions, getting the same DMs.
Yeah.
But it is so important. It really is. You know, because as you experienced as a young man, the way that you can feel, the isolation, the loneliness, the disconnect, the feelings that you're different and that you're missing something can really drive you down a very miserable, despairing path in life. And someone like you helps people turn the lights on and shows them a better way. So thank you on behalf of all those people.
Thank you, Stephen. And there's a word that I call my students. Maybe we can end on this. And the word I call them is luminaries. Because I call all of my programs stage, right? Stage. And they go, why do you call it stage? And I go, oh, it's stage because of Shakespeare's quote, all of life is a stage, all the world's a stage. And to me, it's true because when I wake up in the morning, the first stage I step on is the stage of fatherhood. And how I show up on that stage matters. And then the second stage I step onto is the stage of being a husband, right? My wife loves it when I make her the coffee. Even though it's terrible, she likes it when I make it, right? And then there's something there. But then the next stage I walk into is I walk into the studio and I'm stepping onto the stage as a teacher. I'm teaching people now. And in this life, you will step onto many different stages playing many different roles. And if you learn how to communicate and play your instrument, you can show up as your best. And then I call them luminary. Why? Double meaning word. Part of it means actor or actress, but it's not about that. It's about you're a source of light. So when you learn how to use your instrument and you show up on stage with the role that you're playing, play songs of love, kindness, and compassion. Play songs that spread goodness. Right? If you feel good while you're listening to this, it's because of the way potentially I played my instrument. And I hope that you'll step onto your stage and the role that you're currently playing and play with your instrument as a luminary to spread more love, kindness, and compassion.
Amen.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The hardest conversations are often the ones we avoid. But what if you had the right question to start them with? Every single guest on The Diary of a CEO has left behind a question in this diary. And it's a question designed to challenge, to connect, and to go deeper with the next guest. And these are all the questions that I have here in my hand. On one side, you've got the question that was asked, the name of the person who wrote it. And on the other side, if you scan that, you can watch the person who came after who answered it. 51 questions split across three different levels, the warm-up level, the open-up level, and the deep level. So you decide how deep the conversation goes. And people play these conversation cards in boardrooms at work, in bedrooms, alone at night, and on first dates, and everywhere in between. I'll put a link to the conversation cards in the description below, and you can get yours at thediary.com. This has always blown my mind a little bit. 53% of you that listen to this show regularly haven't yet subscribed to the show. So could I ask you for a favor? If you like the show and you like what we do here and you want to support us, the free simple way that you can do just that is by hitting the subscribe button. And my commitment to you is if you do that, then I'll do everything in my power, me and my team, to make sure that this show is better for you every single week. We'll listen to your feedback. We'll find the guests that you want me to speak to, and we'll continue to do what we do. Thank you so much.